I actually think that's a pretty good way for us to look at transitional decades in our lives. We actually are given yet another opportunity to think about this again, think about this anew. What is it about the experience of faith and the experience of God that speaks to who we are now and what we need and how we want to connect with the community around us?
Hi there, and welcome to the Mother of Reinvention show. I'm Megan Francis, your host, and in this podcast, we're talking about all the ways women reinvent ourselves as we move toward our 40s and beyond. Whether you're hoping to make a career change, are rediscovering parts of yourself that went dormant during the early years of motherhood, or maybe are trying to pay more attention to your health and wellness, Mother of Reinvention is here to inspire and inform you as you ask yourself, what's next? Throughout my life, I have had a somewhat complicated relationship with faith. I spent my formative years in a loving, peaceful, not particularly rigid or controversial Presbyterian church, and I always considered it to be a really positive influence in my life, so I just didn't really understand people who felt like they'd been damaged by church. But then as I got older, I started looking at things with a more jaded view, as one does, and I also experienced some churches and belief systems that left a really bad taste in my mouth. At some point when I had young kids, I just stopped trying. I drag my wriggling, complaining family to church on Easter and Christmas and the occasional random Sunday, but I just felt like I had lost my connection with God, and I actually started to wonder if that connection had ever really been there to begin with. I especially found myself growing really impatient and even angry with writers and church personalities who seemed so certain and sure of everything. It just rung so inauthentic and smug to me. As it turns out, I make a really bad atheist, but it took me going through some huge life upheavals to realize how much I need to look to something outside myself. But by that point, I'd broken up with the church so thoroughly that opening up that side of myself again was really hard and humbling. And while I was fumbling my way back, I leaned heavily on the words and wisdom of women who write and speak about faith from a nuanced and honest perspective. One of those women has been Episcopal priest Sarah Condon, who you heard at the top of the show. Sarah is the chaplain at Rice University in Houston, as well as a podcast host, writer, author, and mom. I loved getting to talk to Sarah about her faith and spirituality and how it's changed over the years, and also how it's buoyed her through the recent tragic loss of her parents. Just a note that I know faith and belief are tricky topics, especially in today's polarized world. If you're feeling hugely turned off by religious content, possibly to the point of anger, I totally get it. I still think you might find something to enjoy about this conversation with Sarah, even if it's just to find out more about what life is like as a woman priest, or to hear Sarah talk about how she's decided to embrace dressing a little crazier as she approaches 40. Before we jump into all that good stuff, though, I want to give a shout out to this season's sponsor, Vionic. If you've been listening, you know that Vionic is my go-to for stylish, comfortable footwear. Now that the weather is finally cool enough here that I'm wearing jeans most days, I have been living in my Nana Retro sneakers. They come in really fun colors with a classic white stripe and satin detailing, and I have them in mustard yellow. They are basically making my fall casual wardrobe right now. And of course, like all of Vionic's shoes and boots, they feel great on my feet with 3-zone comfort that offers stability, cushioning, and amazing arch support. My feet and legs never ache when I wear Vionic's, even when I'm moving all day. With Vionic's 30-day wear test, you can return any pair of shoes for 30 days for a full refund, even if they've been worn outside. So there's no risk. Go to VionicShoes.com and use promo code MORE, that's M-O-R, to get free shipping on your pair of Vionic's. Again, that's VionicShoes.com and use the promo code MOR for free shipping. Okay, let's get to my interview with Episcopal priest, podcaster, and author, Sarah Condon. Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Hey, I'm really glad to be here.
Well, I am really excited about this topic because our theme for this season of Mother of Reinvention is body and soul. And we've talked a lot about the body and haven't really gotten too much into spirituality. And, you know, we're made up of both. And so I'm really excited to talk to a woman that is in clergy, who's made spiritual life really their calling. I think that's such an interesting place to end up. So before we dive in, tell us a little bit about what your day-to-day role is as a chaplain at a university.
It's really the spiritual care of the students. So it's a lot of coffees and lunches and praying with them. It's also, I find it really reassuring since we live in a fallen world with all sorts of chaotic things happening around us. A lot of conversations about boyfriends.
Yeah. You
know, like that's still the same. You know, some, I will say, really interesting conversations. This is the age in which people are grappling with, you know, sexuality and stuff like that. So, in light of faith. So, yeah. And then we do church every Monday night together, which is just wonderful. And we eat lunch together on Wednesdays. You know, we do a lot of outreach stuff. They're an incredible group of people.
So your husband is the rector of an Episcopal church that you attend. And so I'm curious about the difference is, like, the way you experience leading the church services with your students and maybe what it would be like in a more traditional church service with like a big congregation. Tell us a little bit about how those roles differ.
I would say, you know, one thing I love about my job is that it's a lot of one-on-one time with people. Okay. And while I think you get that, certainly when you're at a bigger church, there's also just a ton of administrative stuff I don't have to deal with.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So I feel really lucky, you know, I feel really, really lucky. Yeah. People often ask me like, and they mean it to be encouraging, right? Like a feminist word. I love that. They're like, when are you going to be the one to run a big church? And I'm like, yeah. Oh, I've seen that up close.
Right. Oh, I don't really know want that. Yeah.
So,
yeah. I'm actually, I mentioned this to you before we jumped on the mic, but I'll just say it on the recording as well, that I'm actually reading a book you wrote. How many years ago did you write that book?
Oh my gosh. I think it's 2016. It's been like
okay, so
6 years.
Isn't it funny how that time just goes right by and it's like, wow, 2016 was 6 years ago. How did that happen? But one of the things, one of the chapters I just read that I was really enjoying was when you were taught, I think you said something like the church is still weird about women or something like the weird about women priests or something like that. So tell that kind of story. I mean, I know you went to college and you studied theology, but you didn't become a priest right away. So what was that journey like? And then how did that, like, how was that process so weird?
I mean, honestly, I think it's, I always like to say, like, I don't think in ministry that we're so unique, right? Because when I talk to friends of mine who are women who are lawyers or who are doctors, it's a lot of similar, like, we don't know what to call you. You know, he's Dr. Smith, but like,
who are you?
We'll just go first name. Yeah, right. Who are you? So it's a lot of that kind of stuff. But it is just like, I don't want to say day-to-day microaggressions. I don't know if I would call it that, but it is like you kind of always have to know that you're going to get some feedback. I mean, even yesterday on, you know, the campus of Rice University, which is, by all means, a pretty progressive place, I was in line. A student was, you know, I was buying a student coffee. We were just in chat, and the guy behind the counter I had on my collar was like, you know, what are you? And I was like, I was like, I'm a priest. And he was like, shouldn't you be a priestess? I was like, that's voodoo. And that's so cool.
It's a very different thing.
This is what I'm doing. That's what that is. So there, you know, it's, and like, I try not to go to a place of anger because he's never met a woman priest before. So he's going to say whatever dumb shit comes to mind. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And God's grace covers that too. So I just kind of like move past it. But yeah, I mean, the process to become a priest was pretty fraught for me. And I think it is for a lot of women because, you know, the decision makers sometimes are people of a different generation, are men, and they're still trying to figure out, like, you know, how we can do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like there, you know, I mean, it's just some really, it's interesting, but again, like we've been ordaining women since the early 70s in our denomination. And so that sounds like a really long time ago, but there are a lot of people who remember the early 1970s
right.
And for them, you know, it's jarring. So.
Well, and these systems haven't just been around for like 50 years or something. I mean, this is like, we're dealing with a long, long history.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's just ingrained. Yeah.
It totally is. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I read an interview between you and Karen Walrond, who was actually on an episode in season one of Mother of Reinvention. And it was for the Quiet Revolution website, which I love that website. So you had you mentioned it, among many other things, and I'll link it in the show notes, that you actually saw yourself going into the clergy as a young kid. So what did that look like? You know, I think you said you were like 10 years old.
Yeah, that was always when I had to write down what I wanted to be when I grew up. I always wrote down that I wanted to be like a stay-at-home mom, like a housewife and a nun, because that was like the only context I had. And right. I always say like it kind of worked out for me. Like I am kind of, you know, both those things on some level, although I feel less like a stay-at-home mom. But yeah, I mean,
and probably not much like a nun.
Yes, so yes. Puberty hit, and I was like, okay. I don't know. Yeah. We do have nuns in the Episcopal Church. It was a viable option for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually am very thankful that my parents grew up Southern Baptist and did not know. They became Episcopalians when I was a baby. Did not know much about the Episcopal Church. Did not know that nuns existed, because I could have had a very different path. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they read that and been like, well, there's a program.
Right. So are nuns, I didn't know that either. Are nuns celibate in the Episcopal Church?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We have nuns and monks. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Anglican nuns and monks. Yeah, so... you know, there are funny things that really impacted me. Clearly, the church I grew up in was really nurturing. But also, like, I remember seeing, oh, gosh, the Nun movie with Whoopi Goldberg.
Sister Act.
And I was like, oh, I can, because like it, she was in that beautiful context. Right. If you know, if you've never seen it, like, she's dating a gangster in, you know, Las Vegas or something, and she sees him shoot someone, and suddenly she has to go into witness protection, and they put her in a convent. And I loved her because she was this beautiful kind of liminal character that was sort of falling in love with the religious life, with the nuns there, and also very much on the outside of it. And, you know, a flashy dresser, a beautiful woman. And I was like, what, how does this, how can I find this in the world? Right. How can I live in both these places?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't grow up with women priests. So for me, it was just, you know, I met my first one when I was 18. It was trying to find a context for doing what I wanted to.
Well, and there's all kinds of nun lore out there. You know, we all grew up with The Sound of Music, and, you know, now it's called The Midwife. I don't know if you've watched that show on
BBC. Yeah, of course. It's fabulous.
It's a great show. But it's like, there, you know, you get, it is, there's something very romantic, really, about the idea. And I can totally see why that appealed to you. And, you know, the housewife part. I mean, that's kind of Mother Superior. Like, she's like a housewife.
Kind of, right? Like, you're just like sweeping a lot, I think, is what I see in the movies.
And
someone's
like herding,
always sweeping
like
a corridor.
The nuns around, and they all seem kind of clueless. I mean, like, they're like children and they need to be led around a lot. Yeah,
yes.
I can totally see
it. I was definitely going to be head nun if I was a nun. You know what I mean? I was head nun or nothing. So, yeah.
Well, how old were you when you were ordained?
I was, oh my God.
Is that the right word, by the way? Ordained? Is that the
correct
word? Okay. Wow. All right.
Good job.
Thanks.
A lot of people are like, ooh, they're like, not sure what to say. So good job. I was 28. I think that's right. Yeah. So 10, I'm trying to think, how old is our son? Yeah, I guess about 28. So I did undergrad and then met my husband, got married like very quickly, as Johnny Cash said, got married in a fever.
Yeah.
And moved to New York City. And I went to seminary up there at Yale. So,
So you, was that like before you had become a mom, that you became ordained?
So I kind of became a mother in seminary.
Okay.
Which I don't recommend. Not recommend.
I mean, I've heard it's hard to even be, you know, as like a regular student. I don't know.
Was the only one at Yale Divinity School that was pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty intense. Yeah. But I had him over, this is so, poor kid, over the Christmas break, my second year of seminary.
Well, that's lucky. Good timing.
Just had him. And I remember everyone was like, well, I mean, clearly you're going to like quit or like take a semester off. And I was always just like, you know, I feel like my grandmother's just kind of like had babies and like went back to working in the fields in Mississippi. Like, it'll be fine.
Right.
And it was. Yes. I mean, you know, we figured it out. So, Yeah.
I think there was a part in your book where you were actually talking about taking your exams. So you were pregnant while you were taking your exams, or were you like in labor? Something was going on. I don't remember what.
Oh gosh. I don't know. I haven't read my book in so long. I just remember sort of having him like finishing exams, like at the very last minute, being super, super pregnant, and then like having him.
Yeah.
You know, it was just super intense.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. But I couldn't have done what I did without my husband. I mean, he like totally, he did this really great thing where Episcopal priests, depending on the diocese, men actually do get paternity leave, which is amazing.
Okay.
So I can't remember. I think he got 8 weeks maybe, and he actually took it slowly. So he took it on the days when I had to go in for class. So that's how we kind of made it work. But yeah.
Yeah. All right. So then now what does your family life look like? You're more, I don't want to, you know, well, the show is all about talking about our age. So you're 39 now?
I will be 39 in, November 15th.
Okay. Really, so it's been just about 10 years.
Yeah.
And so now that baby is a boy. Yeah. And what else is happening with your family?
So we have a daughter now. Her name is Annie and she is 7.
Okay.
So yeah, they're just like second grade and fifth grade. So I'm moving into a very, you know, that stage of motherhood shifts so dramatically from when they're small.
Well, you're in the gravy years right now. I think 7 and 10 is fantastic time.
They're so fun.
Yes, like, and they still really love you and like,
yeah,
they want to spend time with you, but they can, you know, wipe their own butts most of the time. And
Yes.
So, yeah. Okay. So have you felt anything about your spiritual life shift as like your experience of motherhood has shifted or as you've moved, you know, you're on the brink of your 40s? Tell me, is there anything different about how you feel about your role now or even just your place in the spiritual life?
I mean, I think your spiritual life is, it's such a, you know, we want to think of things as being really linear.
Yeah.
And of course, as a Christian, I always think, you know, things are cross-shaped, which means that it's like ebbs and flows. It's fragments. It meets in the middle. It's all over the place. So, you know, when we had our son and then our daughter and I would be in church on Sunday mornings and we are big believers at my husband's church about having children in church, which is as chaotic as it sounds.
Right.
But we really love it and we really believe in it. We've like cleared out space in the back of the church for kids. So it's a big thing for us. But so, you know, I remember sitting with them and thinking when they were really little, like, okay, so I guess they're just going to ruin church for me.
You know, right.
Because it was just like trying to keep them from like hitting each other or what, you know, just the kind of constant chaos of small children. And now it's like such a weird thing when your kids go through stages and it impacts your spirituality. Cause I kind of feel like I've looked up in the past year and I will say our son is the word we use in the Episcopal church and a lot of churches is liturgy. So the words we say every Sunday. Mm. So like, you know, the confession, the prayers of people, he's saying those things. And so it's a funny thing of like, oh, I can kind of rest and really enjoy worship again. Our daughter does like cartoon voices during the liturgy. So she is like doing her own thing and that's her own spiritual journey. Yeah. And I totally affirm it. But you know, it's just, it's really like wonderful to be in this space of like feeling like I can rest in it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there's something about being in that place where you, you're pouring so much of yourself on a Sunday morning, which maybe would have been your time to like feel rested and renewed and, and all that. And now you're pouring it all that into these small people. And that's like a different kind of expression of faith, but not one that like feels great at the moment always.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a very good way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all changing. And here you are, you know, kind of with your eye on this next decade of life and things change a lot. You know, you're at 7 and 10. I mean, just wait till you can leave them both at home. They're off in high school. They can drive themselves places. I mean, it just changes so much. And I know that I'm seeing from other women around me who are in that next stage, like often a return to faith that had kind of gotten stale or forgotten or maybe even like outwardly rejected. Sometimes finding it brand new. So I'm wondering if you're seeing that happening in, you know, probably not in the students in quite the same way, but like in the communities around you, that this time of life can be really spiritually rich, really, and like kind of new.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say the students, because one thing I do think that we don't realize about college students and their parents really worry about, like, they're going to go, you know, we've raised them in the church, they're going to go to college, you know, they have to go to church. And of course, I'm at Rice, where a lot of kids ended up there because they're like very parented. We'll just put it that way, right?
Yes.
And so they really like send their kids with the anticipation that they will go to church every Sunday. And what I always say is like, they probably won't, especially initially, and they're going to have to choose church again. Mm. They're going to have to choose faith again. And you want them to do that, right? You want them to do it on their own terms. You want them to be curious about it. You want them to maybe try something different. And I actually think that's a pretty good way for us to look at like kind of these, especially transitional decades in our lives, is like, we actually are given yet another opportunity to like think about this again, think about this anew. What is it about the experience of faith and the experience of God that speaks to who we are now and what we need and how we want to connect with the community around us? I will say one thing I see, and I just want to say this as a word of grace. I do see moms who did all the stuff. Mm. You know, they were the HBICs of the church when they were my age, right? They did all the Sunday school, they did all the youth group, they did it all. And they hit like 50 and they stopped coming. Mm. And I'm not that age. I haven't done that thing. But I do want to say that it's funny. I watched my own mother go through that. And then it was like, honestly, about like 60, she kind of, it was like, okay, she'd had to take a break from church to come back to it. I think we don't talk about that enough. You know, we kind of act like there's like a finality and you're never coming back and things are never changing. And it's like, no, sometimes people actually need to rest.
Yeah.
So, and sometimes rest is outside of church for them.
And I think that I experienced something similar in my mid 30s because I had kids on the younger side. And so I had spent, you know, several years trying to get my five small children in. And I was also, I know.
And did you feel like balloons should like fall out of the ceiling?
I kind of
when you
did sometimes.
Yeah, they should have.
You know, but
they
I was like often slinking in the back a little bit late and then grumpy because we were late. And yes. And then I remember just leaving church one day and being like, why am I even doing this? Like, what, for whom am I doing this? And didn't go back for like 6 years or something. I mean, I just was like, I just cried uncle on the whole thing. And I wish that I'd had a longer line of sight on why I was doing it and that it wasn't really because I was going to have an amazing spiritual awakening every week or something. Like maybe that wasn't really the point. But I tapped out and I had to like rediscover it. I'm curious for you, you grew up in the church. You said your parents became Episcopal when you were a baby, but you grew up in the church. And so for you, it's now become, I mean, I'm like brushing your teeth. Well, now, I mean, obviously because you're clergy, but even if you weren't, it becomes so embedded and ingrained in your life. What do you see the difference between people who, for whom it was really embedded and for whom they come into it later in life, whether as a student, like around that age, or maybe even later in their 30s or 40s or beyond?
Gosh, that's such a heavy question. Because one thing I will say is I feel very lucky that I was raised, and this is no shade on other traditions, but I feel very lucky that I was raised in a tradition where I was encouraged to do whatever I wanted, where women, while I didn't see women in leadership directly in my church, I knew it was a possibility. There was no moralistic kind of stuff put on specifically on women. And what I see actually in my own ministry is a lot of women who have to recover from that before they can even kind of go to what's next. I mean, I guess for me, there's a lot of realms in which you can talk about different. I was a hospital chaplain. That was my first job in ministry. And I will say there was a tangible difference in walking in rooms where people had a faith. So I'm not even talking about Christian, but just a faith versus when I walked in rooms and there was none. And it always made me really sad for the people that did not have any, because there was usually just a lot of fear, you know? And I for me, you know, I it's hard for me to talk about the difference between people who sort of have regular religious experience and people who don't. What I can say for myself is that I can't get out of bed in the morning without it. And I kind of marvel at people who do. I'm like, that's amazing.
Right. Look at you.
Yeah, look at you just out there doing it on your own. Yeah. You know, like I feel like, especially in the age that we live in, where the standards for getting everything right are so high. And then, you know, we certainly have this sort of cultural thing movement that is great, where it's like, you know, imperfection and vulnerability and all these kinds of buzzwords. But I need someone to say, I need someone to come from the outside.
Yeah.
Like it has to come from the outside of me to say, like, actually, like, you are loved and you are enough and you are forgiven. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just impressed by anyone who doesn't need that.
Who doesn't need it. Well, and we are in this very self-sufficient frame of mind. And I also think that there's, you know, you mentioned like the having to recover from maybe the church or religious environment you grew up in before you can embrace something that fits better. It's like there's two different ways to look at faith, in particular the Christian faith, which is the one I'm most familiar with. There's like, it can either be something you're striving to do right, or it can be something like where you say, I can't do it right. That's why I need it. And I don't think like we're very polarized in the United States and in our, the way we do, I'm doing huge like air quotes, do church or do religion here. There's a lot of like trying to like achieve, even though that goes against the basic tenets. And we all know that.
Right.
Somehow it still kind of insidiously like becomes part of that conversation.
I mean, American Christianity is its own fallenness. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's, it's just because like it really gets combined with sort of this like, you know, oh my God, like bootstraps
kind of
thing. And, you know, or like, you know, God helps those who help themselves, or God doesn't give us more than, you know, we can handle. And it's like, none of that is in the Bible, you know, like it's just and it's really bleak. It's a bleak word to people who are suffering. So, yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, Sarah. And when we get back, I definitely want to talk a little bit more about this kind of coming into this phase of life with maybe someone coming in and thinking, man, I just feel like there's something, I want something more. I don't know what it is, and like how they even start with that. So we will be right back. We are halfway through season 2 of the Mother of Reinvention podcast, and I would love to hear from you about what other kinds of content you might be looking for. I've got lots of ideas, from more written articles to webinars and maybe even eventually in real life events, but I need to hear from you. Drop me a note at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com to let me know which topics and guests you're enjoying most, what you'd like to hear more of, and what other ways Mother of Reinvention can be a resource and inspiration to you. Your feedback is so helpful as I'm planning future content, so please reach out. Again, that's motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com, or you can also get in touch on Instagram. That's at Megan Francis, M-E-A-G-A-N Francis. I can't wait to hear from you soon. Okay, Sarah, before we keep talking about this sort of like, I don't know, phase of life thing, and I think this actually kind of plays into the stage of life that you're in. I know that for myself, I was raised in, well, my family was Catholic till I was like 6. I don't really remember much about that, except I always feel kind of an affinity for Catholics, but I don't have much of a, I don't have much of a memory of that. But then after that, it was very mainline Protestant. Until I was a teen and my mom went to a Pentecostal church for a couple times. And that was, that was really something.
You have been on a journey.
Yes. Okay. But I just think even, you know, being raised in a church or the church is one thing. And then the type of church you were raised in, which you kind of hinted at before or alluded to, can be a whole nother thing. And I think that sometimes we forget that there are all these people out there who are like on the same I mean, they're in the same league, I guess, or like in the same, I don't want to use words like team and league. That's not what I'm getting at. But they have the sure. same basic belief structure that they're coming from, but their experience of it was so different as to be like foreign. Like, you yeah. know, growing up in a mostly in a Presbyterian church, the first time I walked into like a hands in the air church with like a yeah. cool rock band at the front, and I was like, wait, what? That this right. is not make any right. sense. And I think that the older
you're like, what do I do with my hands? What do I do with my hands?
Do I put them up? Do I not?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that comfort level, I don't know. Do you think the comfort level restricts you or prohibits you from growing? Or do you think it's a good thing? I kind of go back and forth on that myself. I'm curious about your take on that.
Gosh. I mean, for me, it's a comfort. I mean, yeah. just because like the liturgy, you know, I know that's a churchy word. It's you know, we're similar to the Catholic Church. It's the same thing every Sunday, right? So the only thing that's different is going to be the sermon and a few prayers. And it just feels like a hammock that I can like rest in.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, we definitely like on vacation, like I will make us go to other churches. I do that a lot, actually, just because I want us to have the experience, especially when we were younger, but even now, of what it's like to walk in as a young family to a church.
Yeah.
As clergy, I think it's really important that we know how intense that can be, how off-putting it can be, you know, like yeah. just like, and then, you know, to see what different traditions do. I will say it's hard for me as an ordained woman. We tried a couple churches several summers ago, and I was the one that was like, we got to go to these, the big churches, the mega churches, kind of rock band experience. We got to go to these and see what they're like, because my husband and I both grew up in the Episcopal Church. And it's tough for me that in, I would say, 98% of those circles, women weren't ordained. And it was enough of a bummer that like we were just collectively like, yeah, we don't have to do that. You know,
right.
like they can do their thing. That's cool. But like, we don't have to kind of put ourselves through that.
Yeah. So, yeah. That makes yeah. sense. Do you see in the congregation at the church you attend, or I don't know that it happens as much with the younger people, but this sort of like, this is the kind of church I'm used to. I can't, you know, like if someone did grow up in more of like that charismatic or very sure. evangelical sure. background, do they have a hard yeah. time with that quietness and that repetition that you have in the Episcopal Church? Just like I had a hard time going in the other direction.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny. So my student body is so interesting. My population of students that show up. So I would say it's probably half kids who are raised in the Episcopal Church, and the other half is like, some of them come from big evangelical churches. Some of them come from nothing, right? One thing about our ministry on campus that is unique is that we are, we believe that the promise of God's love and redemption is true for all people, including LGBTQ students. And I think, I hate saying this out loud, but I think we're the only ministry on campus that does that.
Mm.
And so that means that's also a larger part of our student body population. So I don't know. I think some of them may come from other things, but because they know, and this may feel uncomfortable to them, right? The Episcopal Church may be like, oh my gosh, it's so much liturgy. They're saying the same thing every week. But because they know that we love, affirm, celebrate, accept them, I think they're kind of willing to tiptoe into unknown lands.
Mm, yeah. And that inclusiveness,
yeah.
it's not like quote evangelical unquote, the way right. that we sometimes right. think of it, but like it right. is in its own way.
Oh yeah.
Being inclusive invites people in.
Oh, I mean, like the word evangelical has just been so tattered and torn. She tired. I mean, that word is tired.
Because what does it even mean, really?
Yeah. It means to gospel.
Right.
That's what it means. It means to gospel, which, you know, is literally just to share good news with people. So yeah, I mean, my hope honestly is that we're like affirming an evangelical in that way.
Yeah. I was just reading a book by Tish Harrison Warren, and it was actually one that I had on my Kindle for a really long time and never read. And yeah. then I think maybe it popped up that maybe she's got a column in the New York Times or something. And I was like, hey, yeah. that name sounds familiar. So anyway, I was reading it, and I thought it was interesting that she was saying something about the expectation that you're going to have, like in certain churches, that you're going to have like a profound emotional experience every time you go in and how exhausting that can be. And I think that that was what always appealed to me about a more liturgical service. Like I can just show up. I don't really, it's not performative.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, it's funny though. I mean, there is a very, you want to talk about body and spirit. There is a very body spirit thing that happens in those churches for people in a really genuine way.
Right.
But I think that the trouble we get into is when it does become like, when it does become performative and you're not kind of able to rest in, you know, in what we would say what the Holy Spirit is doing.
Which some weeks might feel like not much.
I mean, most of the time. Yeah. I mean, I think that like I go to church and, you know, I said this in my book and I say it all the time, but we went to church every Sunday as a family in much the same way when I was a kid, in much the same way we go to church now. And, you know, which just means like, it's what you do on Sunday morning. You can complain all you want. We're still getting in the car. And I would ask my mom, why are we even going? Especially because, you know, I grew up in Mississippi. We're surrounded by a lot of sort of more evangelical, we'll use the tattered version of the word, but fervent, I would say, Christians, you know, who had like rules about like dancing and like, you know, things like that. And we didn't have rules like that. And so I didn't understand why we're so committed to this idea.
Right.
And she said, we go to church because we want you to have something to fall back on when your life gets hard. And that, and my life has become incredibly hard. And that has been true. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. I know that you experienced a huge loss and one that I think a lot of people in this age range experience, not in quite such a dramatic and sudden way as you have. But I mean, loss is something that becomes more and more of a thing as we get older. How has that impacted your faith practice, the way that you interact with your, you know, I don't know if you'd call them your congregants, but your community.
Sure.
Tell us about what happened and then the effect of that.
Yeah. So, in December of, 2020, both my parents were killed in a car accident. It was not their fault. It was really bad. And they died almost, my dad died. I mean, they both died on the scene, but there was actually a great comfort to me. There was a woman there, a young woman who's a nursing student, and she got out of the car, and I can't even believe this, but crawled into the wreckage of their RV that they had just bought 6 weeks earlier to be retired. Just brutal. But she crawled into it, and my mother was dying. My dad was dead at that point and prayed over her. And it's funny. I love that, right? I love that. And also I know that my mother chose to become an Episcopalian, and I worry that, you know, I hope her prayers weren't too Baptist for her. Like, that's always like the thought I have.
But yes.
Anyway, just an incredible movement of God in that moment. But yeah, I mean, it definitely altered my relationship with the congregation for a while, just in that, like, I could not face people. I found that to be really hard. And it's funny, it was easier for me to face my college students. And I don't know why. They would look at me. It's like, I think you hit an age when you feel like you need to like have all the answers and they're not there yet.
Like maybe people who are older feel like they have to do something.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they have to say the right thing.
Right.
And they talk about their dead parent. And I'm like, oh my God, you lost your mom when she was 93. So hard. You know, like, it's just like, please don't talk. And my college students just would show up with food and with toys for my kids and just not say much. And that was kind of all I could handle. And even now I will say, like, I'm more guarded. Like, I get to church like 5 minutes late. You know, I talk to who I want to talk to, and then I leave, because you know, I'm still, I mean, I wrote somebody an email today and I said, you know, I can't do this. We're still in a state of deep grief. Mm. And you're totally right. I mean, I'm quickly approaching 40. It's, you know, I am starting to notice more people losing their parents. And also I have to say it's such an, you know, I do actually, and people struggle with this. I want to say people struggle with this, but, I do believe, that God is in everything, that happens to us. I really believe that. And so it is very powerful to me that I lost my parents in a moment when our whole world is in deep grief, mm-hmm. right? Like yeah. people have lost, there's such a comfort to me that like, you know, there's all these books about grief. There's all these books about loss. And it makes me feel less alone. So even though I didn't lose them because of COVID, I feel surrounded by people who are in mourning.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there's, you know, there's the truisms, and we've talked about like the things people say, like God never gives someone more than they can handle, or right. everything happens for a reason, or what, you know, whatever right, your, right, right. your pick of the day,
whatever
is.
Your sign from the Target section for your right. kitchen.
Exactly.
Says. The wine, laughter, friends. Yeah.
yeah. Or the millennial version is like, Jesus and mascara or whatever, you know, yeah. like on the yeah, tank yeah, tops. Yeah.
But I'm sure Jesus loves that. Okay.
sure. Nothing he likes better than being a marketing slogan, right. but I do, but there's like, there's the thing, there's the little nugget of truth. If you believe God isn't everything, that's not quite the same thing as saying everything happens for a reason or God made it happen. It's just,
yeah.
There's God in it. You know, it's just like an interesting and nuanced way of looking at the fact that things happen. And a church in my town had a service last year and I think they called it something like, why does everything happen for a reason? And why does yeah. anything happen? Like, why does anything happen at all? you know, yeah. like, what does that even mean? And what, yeah. where is God in it? And I think that, no matter, you know, if you're a priest or someone who doesn't know what they believe, or maybe has no belief system, like that's something we all kind of grapple with.
Oh, it is the question. It is, you know, there's a word for it in theology. Theodicy is the question.
Okay.
Like, why does God allow bad things to happen? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, I actually think God had been preparing me for this moment, for this transition my whole life. You know, my parents both came from immense tragedy. My mom had lost her dad and her brother by the time she was 8 years old. My father lost his father in high school. Mm-hmm. And they were always very open about loss and also about maybe the difficulty of faith, but also faith in the face of loss. And so like I take a lot of comfort actually in my parents' deaths and what my parents taught me. I also, and I hesitate to like point to this interview because I know it's troubling for people to hear me say this. It's funny. It's more troubling for people that nothing has happened. Nothing this traumatic has happened right. to you to hear me say this, but Stephen Colbert did an interview with Joe Biden, and you know, they both come from just enormous loss,
yes.
right?
Yeah.
And they're both very faithful Christians. They're both Catholic. And I think it was Colbert that said, one of them said to the other, like, it's a Dostoevsky quote, what punishments from God are not also gifts. Mm-hmm. And I know people hear that word punishment, and I know it sends them the other direction, but like, just like try to, you know, place it in the Russian writer sense that it is and try not to internalize it too much as like scripture. It's not. But, you know, I can't even tell you like the army of people my parents' age who've shown up for us in our lives. The people who served as grandparents to my children, the way that we have been like taken care of in the midst of this is like staggering. It's just staggering to me. And so, you know, I don't think, you know, God causing things. We don't know. We can talk about that all the time. It's not as interesting to me as the way that God has created this net for me to fall in.
Well, because we really can't know if it was caused by, if, you know, God's right. like a puppeteer pulling strings because
right.
like we don't really get to see what that plan, that's not for us to know. There's like, right. you know, so. Why right. fixate on it? But right. what you can see is the, yeah. what's happened for you and your what people have done for you and the and the safety net that has come out for you. And I think that that's really profound. So, Sarah, I'm just thinking about the people listening to this episode. And as we're wrapping up, there's going to be the ones who already have some kind of faith practice and they're listening to this and nodding along. And then there's going to be the ones who don't have one and don't care. And they're like, okay, that's interesting, whatever. And they're going to move on. And then there's like this other group. And those are the ones who are either super irritated right now. And I know that because I would have been in that group at, you know, for a chunk of my life. Or just feeling like a little, I don't know, a pull or intrigue or just saying, I don't know what that's like. I wish I had something in my life like that. Yeah. A belief system, a faith in something beyond me. And I don't even know where to start. And I'm wondering what you would say to someone listening to that who's having a reaction one way or the other.
Yeah. Go to an AA meeting is like always my first advice, because you can roll in there and not say anything. And if you want to see God up close, go to an AA meeting.
Okay.
I mean, I'm a big fan of laying flat on the floor and listening to breath and listening for the voice of God. I mean, that's for me is like a huge, like that's like step one. When I'm feeling lost. And I highly recommend that to people. I think finding a quiet church, a lot of churches leave their doors open to sit in, is super, super important. I think there are like three different things you can do before you maybe put yourself through. Gosh, I'm such an advocate for Jesus. Before you put yourself through trying to walk into a congregation.
Well, he is awfully perfect. And I used to find that kind of annoying, honestly. Yeah. So, like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always think about this. People have to be really gentle on themselves. I grew up with a grandmother. So my dad's mother, I mean, I'm telling you, there is so much tragedy in my family history. And if you believe in family systems, then you know that these things repeat themselves. And so my grandmother was raised by her grandmother. Her mother died in childbirth, which means that my grandmother was raised by someone who like remembered the Civil War.
Wow.
And so she was very old school in her piety and her, you know, like cooking, very old school. And she would, I would sleep in the same bed with her as a kid, and she would kneel on the side of the bed every night to pray, like a Norman Rockwell painting. Right. You know, like, who does that? And I remember, like, always thinking, like, man, that'd be cool. You know, I wish I could do that. And I would, you know, like, it would be like Lent, right? Or it would be like the new year, or it would just be a Monday. And I'm like, today is the day. Like, and then, you know, like 2 days in, if I'm lucky, I'd like fall asleep. And as I'm falling asleep, and pray and kneel on the side of the bed, you
right.
know?
Yeah.
And like 3 years ago, it's got to be 3 years ago, random, like a Thursday in November, I was like, I think I'm going to kneel to pray tonight. And I'm telling you, I have done it every night since then.
Wow.
So all that is to say, it's like we can push as hard as we want to and recommit ourselves and, you know, and treat ourselves, I think, actually pretty poorly because we think, oh, we don't have enough faith and we're not, you know. And what I would say is try to lay off and try to know that God is going to do what God's going to do. And that someday you may look up and realize, like, you too are an old lady that remembers the Civil War praying by her bedside. So.
I love that. And it's not so different from, like, from really like habit science and things. Like the harder you push sometimes, actually the more you push away or the harder it is, and like letting go and letting things happen can be.
Well, St. Paul actually writes in the epistles, the greater the law, the greater the trespass.
Mm.
So, you know, the more we're like, oh, we have to get this right. Never, you know, don't dance, you know, these kinds of things.
Don't move your legs in a rhythmic manner.
The more like Whitney Houston's, I want to dance with somebody, comes on to the grocery store and there you are. Yep. What are you going to do? You know? So, yeah.
I love it. Well, Sarah, what's next for you? You're coming into, you're in the gravy years with your kids. You've got, sounds like a job that you love. You're moving into this new decade. Is there anything new on the horizon, or like, how are you kind of hoping to use this next stage?
gosh, I feel so lucky. And I know that's also a hard thing for people to hear me say right now. I feel really lucky. Like, I feel like, yes, I have lost my parents. Yes, they were. I cannot even tell you the most incredible people. I mean, they're the kind of people that, like, when we didn't know who to, like, you know, you can send whatever the money is called when people die and you write it at the end of the obituary.
Yeah.
We're like,
in memoriam or in lieu of flowers. Yeah. Or whatever.
I was like, well, mom's really worried about her yoga studio right? in the pandemic. I mean, they were just like the best, you know? So, but I feel like this sounds, I don't mean this to sound like it has as much ego as it sounds, but I feel like my wisdom has been sped up.
Mm. Yeah. Right? No, that makes total like sense.
I've had so much loss and so much tragedy at a pretty early stage in life that there are things that I'm letting go of that feel kind of incredible. Mm. I find that this is so weird, but I'm like dressing in a way that is like a little bit crazier and I kind of love, right? Like I can see some gray hairs coming in and I'm like, oh, these are hard earned. Like,
yeah,
there's, you know, like I that's a gift to me. That is actually one of the gifts of this is that I feel older than I am. And I feel like that means I get to live even more life.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much. I was going to mention when you mentioned, you know, how wonderful your parents were, that your writings, I've read a few of your blog posts, and you really do speak about your parents very movingly. And I can tell they were fantastic people. So we will link that in the show notes, as well as your podcast and your book. If you know, you can handle anyone reading it. I went and found it on my Kindle and it... And I'm like about halfway through and really enjoying it. So thank you. So even though it was a different stage of life for you, it's still some great stuff in there. So thank you so much, Sarah. It's been great having you on the show.
Thanks.
Well, thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Mother of Reinvention. Like always, everything from today's episode will be in the show notes at motherofreinventionshow.com. And don't forget to check out our sponsor, Vionic, and my favorite fall loafer, the Willa Flat. Remember, you can get free shipping by going to vionicshoes.com and using the code MORE, that's M-O-R, at checkout. If you are loving this show, it would help me out a lot if you leave me a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, you can always send an email at motherofreinventionshow@gmail.com. Okay, friends, thanks so much for listening, and we'll be back with another great episode next Thursday. Talk to you soon.